Hello, everyone. Good morning. I'm going to go ahead and start. We're waiting for another speaker, Naomi Moneypenny. I am not Naomi, believe it or not, but she'll be here any minute, I suspect. But I'm going to go ahead and get started so we can dive right in, and I'll introduce Naomi when she gets here. My name is Mike McMahon, and I'm a senior director at Microsoft. I work on the U.S. government affairs team, and I'm based in Washington, D.C. And today I want to talk to you about a few things. Actually, before I begin, there's some business to discuss here, I guess. Jonathan Freebert was my co-presenter. Jonathan had a family emergency, had to leave last night, so Jonathan will not be here. I'll do my best to cover Jonathan's slides. Please evaluate this session. I think you probably, if you've attended these sessions before, you've seen this slide before, but please, we value all feedback that we get, so please make a point of evaluating and letting us know how we can improve this session. The current situation, as I said, my name is Mike McMahon. I'm here to talk about a few things. I want to talk a little bit about computer science education and the state of play here in the U.S. today, particularly on K-12. I also want to talk about what Microsoft is doing to help address the issue that we see as a lack of enough K-12 computer science education access for kids in schools today. I also want to spend a moment talking about a coalition that Microsoft has established with some other technology partners and companies to address some of the issues. Namely, we're trying to seek funding from the federal government to the states to try to drive some more access to computer science in schools. And then finally, I'll talk a minute about a program that Jonathan Freebert and I manage for Microsoft called the Voices for Innovation Network, or VFI for short. And VFI is just a way that makes getting involved in public policy issues much easier for technology companies, consumers, and others as a way to sort of communicate directly with members of Congress or state and local officials. So I'll get into that in a little bit more detail. In a few minutes. So just to start, computer software is changing everything. Computers and software is changing everything. And I know that this room here knows that more than others. This is not something that is probably easy to overstate, frankly. When you think about all the changes that have occurred in the economy in the U.S., around the world, because of computers, because of software in particular, it's truly amazing in such a short time. Every segment of the economy. Here's Naomi Moneypenny. Hello, Naomi. She had a fantastic opening. It was unbelievable. It involved fire and juggling. It was crazy stuff. Every segment of our economy has been touched by the changes in computer science and computer technology and software. You think about segments of the economy, health, government, the way services are delivered, finance, even things like advanced manufacturing and agriculture have been greatly improved in a very, very short period of time around technology. And you think about all the changes that have come and all this disruption that's occurred and how it's impacted our lives on a personal level in ways that sometimes seem very subtle, but they've happened very quickly. People communicate in very different ways with people they care and love. People buy and sell things in many different ways because of technology and the software's addition to that technology. People view their entertainment in many different ways. And I was sort of struck by this week when I was reading an article about the debates on Monday between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And I'm just curious by what show of hands, how many people here had a chance to see the debates? So if you could keep your hands up, how many people actually watched the debates on a device and not a TV? Not very many of you. One person did? Probably not very many of you. Well, the article was talking about, they were trying to determine if this particular debate was the most watched in history, and they were comparing it really to the 1980 debate between Walter Mondale and Ronald Reagan. And I think in the end, they thought that about 89 or 90 million people around the world watched this debate on TV. But then the article went on to say, one thing they can't tell for sure is how many people watched it online on their devices. And it's estimated that tens of millions of people actually watched the debates online on devices no matter where they were. And that might seem a little trivial. So what? People are streaming, watching something online. That's not something new. But you think about how important that debate was to a lot of people. Significant issues were being debated. It's going to have tremendous impact on people's lives. People care about who the next president of the United States is going to be. One of those two candidates is going to be the president. And so people trusted they could use their technology. They just assumed it was going to work. They watched it online. And millions and millions of people did this. That doesn't account for people who are going to watch the debates later after Monday at a later time. And this was something that wasn't actually possible one or two cycles ago. But we take it for granted today because of all the changes we're seeing. So you think about this change, and it's going to continue to occur all the time. And you think about the opportunity that exists for kids in America in particular today, because so much of this is coming from U.S. high-tech companies. And you think that their future must be so bright because they can take advantage of this. They can grow with these changes, these disruptive technologies. They can gain from. They'll have lots of opportunity to grow and make a lot of money in a high-tech industry in the future. But the reality of it is, our education system today is not really equipped to provide the kind of access and education to kids that the kids need to develop the pipeline that the country needs to move forward in high tech. The Gallup did a research survey with Google recently, and they polled parents across the country in every school district, and they also polled separately teachers and school administrators. And what they found was 9 in 10 parents actually want their kids to study computer science in schools. And when they polled teachers and school administrators, they found that actually 1 in 4 schools actually offers computer programming. So you can imagine this disconnect between what parents want and what schools are providing. And this creates a tremendous gap between the lucky kids who have the opportunity to be at a school where they might have computer science in their schools and the vast majority who don't have that kind of access. This is not an issue that's important only to the high-tech sector and companies that want to hire future high-tech employees. As I said before, this cuts across every segment of our economy, every company, from agriculture companies, combines, agriculture that use lots of high-tech and positioning GPS systems to monitor how much pesticide goes down, to all the advances we're seeing in healthcare, are all going to be putting demands on the labor workforce and seeking high-tech workers in that workforce. So this is important to high-tech, but it's also important to parents. So you would think that with all this opportunity that we're educating more computer science engineers in colleges today. The reality of it is we're not. We're actually down from our high mark. This is some data that I pulled from the National Science Foundation, and they tracked how many college graduates with computer science engineering degrees the country was producing over the years. And as you can see, our high water mark was 2003, and then we took a deep dive down to the 2008-2009 period, which is around the Great Recession. And then in 2003, we were producing about 47,000 computer science engineering graduates, a low of about 27,000 in 2008 and 2009. We're climbing back up. We haven't actually achieved our heights. There also was a study that a government agency, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, BLS, put out that looked at how many graduates from computer science degree programs in the U.S. occurred last year in 2015. And they came out, I think it was just under 39,000 individuals actually graduated with computer science degrees. They also, at the same report, pointed out that the economy right now needs to fill 500,000 high-tech jobs this year, many of which will rely on the kinds of skills that a computer science engineer would have coming out of school. And they went on to say that by 2020, they expect the U.S. economy will need to fill 1 million positions, again, relying heavily on the kinds of skill sets that a computer science engineer would have. That our schools are nowhere near fulfilling that goal. They're in no position. We still haven't reached our highs from 2003, and the economy is growing and creating more demand. This is a pipeline issue. It's not just if you don't have good students coming up through the pipeline, you're not going to have good quality students who enough of them to fulfill these demands at the college level. It also is a huge diversity problem. And you all read papers and look online and read news and hear news about the tech sector and how much the tech sector gets beat up because we aren't viewed as being diverse enough. We aren't hiring enough diverse candidates. But if you look here, what this shows you here is that if you consider students in high school in America who take the AP CS exam. First of all, there are very few of them compared to other AP exam takers. But if you compare them, only 20% of those exam takers are girls. And that's a very big indicator. People who take AP CS exams in high school are far more likely to go to college and study CS and be successful and then pop out the backside of the pipeline. But here you see that 1 in 5 students are girls in high school. They go on to college. That reflects what the industry is able to hire on the back end. The stats are even more sobering when you consider racial minorities in this equation. One other thing I'll point out on this slide is, out of all of the women in the high-tech workforce working in the U.S. today, of all the workers, only 1 in 4 is a woman. So this is a huge gap. If you consider that we have this incredible need to fulfill these positions in the future all across every segment of our economy, and 1/2 of the population in the U.S. is underserved and is not in the pipeline, we have a lot of work to do. So what this slide shows here, some of the many obstacles that we face in computer science and trying to drive more computer science education awareness at the state levels. This shows you that the majority of states in the country today don't honor a computer science high school course equivalent or credit toward a math or science graduation requirement. So if you're a senior in high school and you're in one of these states that doesn't, one of the many states that doesn't honor that, and you're faced with taking upper level calc your senior year, a computer science degree or PE, the computer science degree doesn't count as the same elective credit as a PE course or a home ec course. And it's not going to count toward the math credit. So you're probably going to go take the calc course. And that just tends to put people on a track away from computer science and onto other professions. So the good news about this slide here, though, is that, as you can see, Microsoft is working with a lot of other tech companies on the ground and the local and state level to change these requirements and to get computer science recognized as an appropriate accredited credit toward a math and science graduation requirement in high school. In 2013, only 12 states in the country made computer science count. But now we're up to 31, and we hope to hit all 50 by at the end of this decade. This is important because, obviously, the number one fastest growing job position in the country is in computer science and high tech. It touches every single color on that wheel, these positions do. And these are also very well-paying jobs. This is a study from the Brookings Institute, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C. The Brookings Institute estimates that over the course of a worker's lifetime, if you have a CS degree, you're going to make 40% more than the average of a college graduate in any other field. So there are significant challenges we face in trying to expose more students to computer science education. We need to get them access to computer science curriculum early on in their careers. There's lots of data that suggests that a student that is able to play with and do programs and play with content at an early age is far more likely to take a computer course in high school and then on into college. It's important that we get kids thinking about and working with these computational theories and problem-solving skills that a computer science program requires for an engineering degree in colleges today. So the challenges are many. Let's spend a minute and talk about some of the solutions. So at Microsoft, our mission is to empower individuals and organizations across the globe to do more. And when it comes to computer science, our vision supports our mission. We want to provide access at every school for every student so they have the opportunity to participate in the new economy. And we want to work with our technology partners to do so. Satya Nadella committed last year to spending $75 million over the course of 3 years to infuse cash into some of the many programs that Microsoft has to provide computer science curriculum to schools locally across the globe. And our approach has been we need to be doing more programmatically, so to provide more curriculum to schools and to work with teachers to increase the exposure that students get and teachers get to computer science, to create programs online that students can access that are self-taught tutorials, and to work with many partners, NGOs and others, our technology partners as well, to drive some of these programs, and also to change public policy. So I'll just go spend a few minutes going over a couple of the programs. YouthSpark, have people heard of YouthSpark? Anyone familiar? So what YouthSpark is, it's primarily Microsoft grants. We work with NGOs and groups like Boys and Girls Clubs of America and Girls Who Code and other things. It's targeting underserved communities. So it's a global program, but I'll speak to what we do in the US here. It focuses on underserved communities. We tend to focus on rural schools that maybe don't have broadband access or don't have computer labs. We also focus on inner city schools. And it's a combination of curriculum that Boys and Girls Clubs can download and kids can play with things. So think of like code.org. That might be a flight of content that we put into a YouthSpark program, working with code.org for an hour of code, or other kind of custom-made programs that Microsoft makes or some of our partners makes. And the Boys and Girls Clubs computers are donated by Microsoft and some of our technology partners. And these kids are able to sort of teach themselves, play with computer programs, Minecraft games, Hour of Code, and learn some of the basic programming skills. But it's also a way just to familiarize them with technology, because they may not get access to technology in their schools, and oftentimes they don't have access at home. YouthSpark Hub is essentially, it's a, the collection of all of our materials that we have online. So if you aren't the recipient of a Youth Spark grant, you can go online and, again, play with content that's self-teaching. It includes information about things like DigiGirls, which is a mentoring program between female technology leaders and young girls who have a proclivity to get involved in technology at an early age. Congressional Apps Challenge, other kinds of programs like that, you would find more about on the Youth Spark Hub, and it's available and open to anyone to check out. And then there's another program that we're actually going to double down on. I think the TEALS program is a very interesting and successful program that Microsoft started a few years ago. The TEALS program, what it does is it takes a technology professional and it matches them with a teacher in a school district where computers are not being taught. Work with a teacher, I shouldn't say we, a technologist who's volunteering their time, could be a Microsoft employee, it could be anybody in this room, it could be anybody, it could be from an employee of Google or at Google or Facebook or any other high-tech company. They volunteer for the TEALS program, and they are assigned to a teacher, and it's a long-term commitment, it's usually for a full calendar school year. And they work together and they create a curriculum that that teacher can teach, and the TEALS administrator acts like a trainer of the teacher and helps that teacher who has no technical training, no technology skills necessarily, and helps them to get to a point where they can teach a class. The goal of the program really is to make these teachers self-sufficient, and I'm proud to say that after a couple of years, we're noticing a rate of 90% where the teachers are able to be self-taught and carry on the program in perpetuity when that TEALS volunteer moves on to another school. Our commitment right now is to double down on this program. It started out small. We trained 6,000 students in fiscal year 16. We upped that by 50% in fiscal year 17. Our goal is to train 30,000 students by the end of this three-year program. So we're about a year into it. In two more years, our goal is to hit the 30,000 student level. So in public policy, this is a very important area where we need to do a lot more to educate policymakers about what parents want, what the lack of access that schools are providing to students to meet the needs of the economy for the future. And there are a lot of ways we can do this. We tend to work with other technology partners, some of our competitors in state capitals and in Washington, D.C., and we go and we have a united front and we talk to policymakers. And we talk about this challenge of the pipeline and how the country needs to do a lot more to address the pipeline issue. You saw that Microsoft commits $75 million. There are many other programs we do that isn't a part of that $75 million. I can say that Google and Facebook and Apple have similar programs that are on par with our commitment. And so collectively, the industry spends about $100 million every couple of years on programs like the ones I described. But the reality is that's just a drop in the bucket. In order to really have significant change, the government needs to step in and do more to fund career science education in these schools. So we want to educate them. And so we want to talk to members of Congress and elected officials. And when I say we, I mean people in this room, Microsoft, our competitors. We all need to be ringing the alarm bell together. We want to build a national grassroots movement so members of Congress and elected officials are hearing from people in all walks of life, from all industries. We want to use traditional campaign means, social media, Facebook pages, posts, Twitter, paid advertising, all kinds of different methods to make sure we get the message out. We also this year organized a coalition called the Computer Science Education Coalition. The CSEC, its main goal is to secure funding this congressional year for next fiscal year, to create a direct line of federal funding to the states dedicated to computer science education in the schools. Right now, it may surprise you, there is no federal dollars anywhere in the federal budget, it never has been, that's dedicated to computer science to the states. The federal government funds all kinds of programs in education at the state level, building improvements, broadband deployments, textbooks, hiring more teachers, all very, very important things, but not a single dollar is earmarked for computer science education. So the coalition was formed. We have about 80 companies that belong to the coalition today, 80 member companies, and again, it includes companies like Google, Apple, Facebook, HP, many, many others. It includes companies from all sectors of our economy, so transportation companies, telecommunications, defense, energy, all are members of the coalition. We have about another 25 or 30 NGOs and industry trade organizations that belong to the coalition, and we have been fanning out, talking to the Hill for a number of months now, since April, trying to get them to agree to fund computer science education. Our specific goal is, as I said, is to establish a dedicated line of funding to the states. We want to have the states use competitive grants, so we aren't demanding that anyone take a grant from the federal government if a state doesn't want to do that. We don't require that students are forced to take computer science education in K through 12, like they are being forced in some of our trading partners in places like the UK and Germany and parts of China, where they have taken this pipeline issue more seriously, I would say, than the US is. We're asking for an infusion of $250 million for the next fiscal year. And we think that that money would reach 52,000 classrooms and serve 3.6 million students next year alone if we were to get this funding. Now, a lot of people who know education policy point out that this really is a drop in the bucket. $250 million is not a lot of money when you consider the multi-billion dollar education funding that the Congress appropriates every year. But the reason why we chose this dollar amount specifically is, in Congress, you have to have a program that's authorized. So you have to get the authorizers to agree in the House and Senate, Republican, Democrat, and then you have to have a program that is appropriated. And we believe that the ESSA bill, which was signed by the president last December, created an opening for the authorizers to justify federal dollars being used at the state level. The ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, was an update to the No Child Left Behind Act that you all have probably heard of. No Child Left Behind was updated. Some of the stuff that parents hated and school districts hated was dropped. They reauthorized many of the programs in ESSA. And so that's our authorizing justification. And then we have to get, and we chose $250 million because the president in his budget to Congress asked for about that much money for discretionary spending for education. So we know we can match the language in the ESSA Act, which actually for the first time mentioned computer science as one of many things states could spend money on, federal dollars on, for the first time ever. And the White House is asking for a similar amount of money for discretionary spending to the state. So that is, we know that we aren't going to be able to go to the Hill in this current election environment. In an environment where you have sequestration, you have caps, we aren't going to be able to go and ask for more. We just want to get our foot in the door and start with this dollar amount because we think it's so important to get the wheel moving, get the program flowing, get dollars going to the states, and we think very quickly when governors and school superintendents get these dollars and are able to hire computer science teachers and put computer labs in their schools, that Congress will be in a more generous mood to fund more of this in the future and really take a serious crack at addressing this issue. I should say one little factoid that I find very interesting is that today when you look at American high schools, there are more Latin departments in schools than there are computer labs. And the reason for that is because they're cheaper to run. School districts that don't have computer science don't have computer science teachers who are demanding that they put in labs in their schools. And so this is a challenge that we face. It's a cultural challenge we face in a lot of school districts around the country. And we need to first make the dollars available and let the school districts that want to have access to computer science put labs in their schools, bring the curriculum into the schools, and then we think other schools will start to demand the same access. So finally, I want to end, and then I'll turn over to questions, with a program called Voices for Innovation. I mentioned this earlier, VFI for short. What Voices for Innovation is, it's a community of people who are interested in technology policy issues, and it's a way for them to get easily engaged and informed on a topic and find their member of Congress or find their local elected official so they can educate them on any given issue. The community has about 100,000 strong. I would say the majority of them are technology consumers, but the meat of the people in the program, people like Naomi, who's here today, are our technology partners. I would say we have about 15,000 Microsoft partners in the community. We work with the partners very, very closely on a variety of things, but mostly our goal is to keep them informed on technology policy issues that we think impact the technology sector. And we do that by communicating with members on issues that are present and current before Congress or before a state capitol. We do that through emails. We invite those who are interested to learn more, like going back to our website or attending a webinar. If people want to get more engaged, we help them connect with their member of Congress or their elected official locally to talk about an issue. We don't dictate what people say. We don't dictate how people present an issue or what issues they talk about. We just try to make a connection. Because what I know from working in D.C. is members of Congress, in particular, always hear from large companies and large trade associations. They rarely get the opportunity to hear directly from small and mid-sized businesses who are also concerned about many of the same issues. This is a picture here where we took a number of our more active VFI members and we brought them to Washington, D.C. And I can tell you it was fun to watch these somewhat jaded partners who hadn't been involved in the political process, when they'd meet with their member of Congress or meet with senior staff and they would talk about some of the issues we'd all been talking about, they would see these members of Congress ask lots of questions and ask them what blockers they had in their business. And the members were asking about other issues that these small businesses were concerned about. And it really opened the eyes of our VFI members who realized that members of Congress, they really want to do the right thing typically. And they want to really hear from small entrepreneurs and mid-sized entrepreneurs in their states, because they want to make the next Microsoft or Google come from their state. And they want to remove the blockers that these small businesses see, because most of the innovation and most of the economic development in our country comes from small and mid-sized businesses. And on the right, upper right corner is Naomi. We learned that the Senate Small Business Committee wanted to hear from a small business entrepreneur. I believe this was around a patent issue. We happen to know, because Naomi's active in the program, that she is very passionate about software patents and is actually the proud holder of a few USPTO patents. And so we gave the committee Naomi's profile, and I said, this is great. So they invited Naomi, and Naomi came and testified in Washington, D.C. And I think if you talk to Naomi, she would say it was a very professionally fulfilling experience. And then we also do other things with the VFI members. We bring them to Redmond for occasional policy briefings and show them things like the Microsoft Cybercrime Centers and other things. And the idea is we want to make sure that we are engaging in a discussion around policy issues that we think impact the larger technology community. We also want to reward our most active members with information and things that help them in their own business. If a partner can come to Microsoft and they can tour the Microsoft Cybercrime Center, they can go back to their customers and talk about all the latest things that Microsoft's doing. And it really demonstrates that these partners are very plugged in. So we're happy to work with our active partners in VFI. And I hope that you would consider joining VFI as well. Here are some more pictures of our recent fly-in where we met with some elected officials. Of course, this is Microsoft, and I'm going to leave you with a couple of go-dos. I would encourage you to check out VFI and sign up if you haven't signed up already. It's totally free. It's an easy way to stay informed. You can learn more about VFI by going to voicesforinnovation.org. I also would encourage you to please sign up for CSEC. Go to our Facebook page or our Twitter and friend and follow us so you can stay informed. The next step in the request for funding for federal dollars is we had lots of meetings with the appropriators. The appropriation committees have created bills. We didn't get a direct line item, but we got lots of positive. This is going to sound a little bit maybe insignificant, but it's very significant. We got lots of members who go on the record and say they want to see federal dollars used for computer science education at the state level, even though we didn't get a line item written into the bill. That's not bad news for us, because what's going to happen, you may have seen this yesterday, Congress passed a continuing resolution. They didn't set their budgets for next year entirely, so they're going to come back after the elections in a lame duck session. And so we have the opportunity to, at that point in time, push for this $250 million direct funding to the states for competitive grants. And at that point in time, we'd love to have as many voices as we can weighing in with members of Congress, telling them that you think this is an important issue for America, it's an important issue for your local business communities and for your local communities in general. And that will really help demonstrate the urgent need to solve this challenge. And then finally, USparks. Lots of information you can get on the web. You can download any of the tutorials that we have on the web. You can direct people in your communities to them as well. They're really fantastic materials and great content there that I think you'll find very helpful if you take a look at it. This is how you can reach me. And with that, I'll take questions. And is there anything you want to... Yes, it's off right now.
I want to say thank you so very much for coming to this. I am so excited to see so many people here, and it's just amazing because, you know, the computer science education, we know, right? We all know, because we're all technologists sitting here, how important this stuff is. And I don't even have children, and I think it's really important, right? Because I'm a small business owner, and I actually need talent in my organization. So if we're thinking about, you know, American competitiveness, and we're thinking about how we're going to go forward as a country, we've seen some amazing stuff here at the Ignite conference, but we really want to think about how do we keep that amazing pipeline of talent going inside of the U.S. and beyond, obviously, right? We want to be able to work together across many different areas. So I do want to open it up for questions, both from Mike, as well as, you know, make sure that you understand there are lots of things you can get involved with. Obviously, the Voices for Innovation program is there, but we also want to make sure that you understand that you can do things like code.org, Hour of Code. Anybody excited to run an Hour of Code for some students? Yes? Come on, put your hands up, people. Get excited, please. Lots of ways to get excited about this stuff, okay? And then the TEALS program, which is a much bigger commitment, but also extremely fulfilling from a professional level as well. So that is definitely one thing to get involved with, as well as YouthSpark. So any questions for Mike? Anything, comments? Go for it.
So for the TEALS program, it'd be good to talk to somebody who's actually done this before and get an idea of what it took from them and what they gained from it. Is it possible to do that?
I'm sure it is. If you give me your business card, I will have someone who works in the TEALS program contact you. That'd be easy to do. I know that everybody who touches the program, I shouldn't say everybody, but I hear a lot of incredibly positive things about the program, both inside Microsoft and from professionals who are involved.
Go grab a prize off of the chair. Next to the sound guy, there's a little prize there for asking.
I should add this.
You ask a question, you get a little prize. Okay.
I should add that there's a VFI booth on the floor in the expo hall. If you want to learn more, I'll be there later on today, and so will Lacey. Lacey's a VFI member here. Lacey, raise your hand. And Lacey can also zap you with her little device. It didn't zap? They've all been zapped. Okay. Excellent.
Okay. So you were saying that you're requesting
$250 million
from the federal funds. Why is it that those companies can't donate? I mean, I saw that you invested $75 million from Microsoft alone.
Yep.
Why can't the companies bypass the federal government and donate to the schools themselves?
I mean, there are a lot of reasons, because it's a patch meal program. I mean, we have our programs, who has their programs, we coordinate, but they're also very different. It's not a comprehensive approach, first and foremost. Second, $250 million is really just a way to get, that's a strategic play because of the realities of the budget and sequestration, other kinds of issues that we're contending with. If we were to sort of whiteboard this, we'd never ask for $250 million, because that's not enough to really make a big enough impact. But we think that if we get a line of funding that's directed to CS education at the states, that's easy to go back once it's in there to up plus it up every year. And so it will grow from that point in time. So there's no way that high tech could or would fund the kind of investment that we need to meet the 1 million open headcount that the Bureau of Labor and Statistics thinks is going to happen by the year 2020.
What is a good first step for a high school level, like ninth grade, to implement this program?
I would go to the YouthSpark website and see what kind of programs you have. There's all kinds of self-teaching tutorials that kids can use, gamification, Minecraft kinds of things, and a lot of research shows that kids who play these games, kids who take these tutorials and read this content, not everybody deals with the same way, but it creates a spark in many of them, and they start to think, they start to learn like computational theories based on playing the games, and it makes what they need to do when they take a computer science course, say in high school, that much more easier and familiar to them. So that's where I'd go first. I also would join VFI and follow the coalition.
Awesome job. I just wanted to find out if Microsoft is considered a thought about, like, for pre-K-12 to have an online course that you can distribute to schools to at least have parents sign children up at home and do any other kind of coursework online outside of the school system, which might be far less expensive than building a STEM or STEAM. You know, obviously we want STEAM classrooms. In Illinois, we are building quite a few. But across the country, there may be very few opportunities there. But didn't know if there was a curriculum that maybe Microsoft could sponsor that you could do online, even after hours.
There are. If you go on the USPARC site, you'll see there's all kinds of programs at entry level, and the further you go up the stack, there are more and more programs you can take that are not just one-off games. They're full curriculum that you can use. And there's programs there for teachers to take. They don't need to be involved at all with TEALS. A teacher can be self-directed and go online and grab this information, and it's all there. It's full libraries of content that get them through an entire lesson plan through a year, and they can use them and as they wish.
Hi, my name is Dan McQuiston. I live in Pennsylvania. I've got two questions. One is, you mentioned the federal aspects of what you're trying to do and getting the line item there, strategic play. Is that what you're planning on attacking first? My question is really, are you planning on going into the state levels to talk to those types of governments? I know those can sometimes even be more difficult.
Yeah.
And really, if you look at the local level too, taxes, property taxes are what pays for school districts. So, what is the long-term strategic play?
So the long-term play is to get the federal funding, because that's the most logical way, the most realistic way to make significant change quickly. But we do all kinds of things at the state level. I'd be happy to connect you in Pennsylvania with our state team. I don't know if Pennsylvania is a state where they currently make computer science count as a credit for math and science.
It was up on the map.
Was it colored purple?
Yeah.
Okay, so it does. But there are issues that we, one challenge we have, it's not even a challenge, one objective we have is to get governors to weigh in with Congress and the White House to say, this is something that we want. And we actually have had tremendous success. We had a joint letter signed by a number of luminaries in technology and 41 governors of both parties that called on Congress to actually fund computer science education. So the more we can do to get governors involved, the more impact it has, especially on a bipartisan basis. So that's one way you can directly help the federal effort from the state level. But there are a whole slew of issues at the state level that need to be resolved. Because as you said, tax dollars at the state level goes to fund schools, and you could do levies and things. We're trying to avoid a patchwork across the country. We're trying to find a way to...
Well, the reason I ask is because, it does kind of follow a trickle-down economics model, which doesn't always necessarily work, as we've seen from past historical, administrations. But the second question I had was really about Girls Who Code.
Yes.
Are you guys involved with that organization, and what are you guys, what is your involvement?
We're heavily involved. We're a sponsor. We're a funder. I don't know in the particulars because that's not in my portfolio. I'd be happy to connect you with the person who is, but we are heavily involved with Girls Who Code. Thanks, Dan.
Go grab something off the chair there next to the sound guy. There's a little thing. Go for it.
Hi, our situation is flipped. We have a really good pre-12. Computer science program, the elementary and high school and so forth, but our junior colleges and our smaller colleges are actually eliminating computer science majors because they cannot find professors to teach those courses. I'm from Nebraska, and we're the light gray one in there. And I guess, what are your insights
on that? I'm from Nebraska, too.
There you go.
What school district?
Shattern State College.
Okay, yeah.
So Shattern, Nebraska. So our issue is recruiting professors to move to rural areas and be able to provide those salaries that are competitive to teach those.
I mean, it's a huge challenge. I mean, the first challenge is if you are a tech-savvy, tech-literate individual worker, getting to even teach is a challenge because there's so many open positions across the economy that they can go and make a lot more doing that than they were as a teacher to begin with. And then add the challenge that to have someone go out to a rural community is tougher. There's no doubt that this is a challenge, and the best way to... one way to address it is if we get more federal funding in the states, the local high schools and junior high, they could actually hire teachers to and train teachers to become computer science trainers of the students, and then do a grassroots up. It might take 7 or 8 or 9 years for Shattern State to have enough students and to justify it, but that's the way you would be more likely to get a teacher out in a place like that, I think.
You had mentioned there's difficulty securing funding to, you know, update or create computer science labs. Are there any coordinated efforts kind of going towards that that you know of, or are there any efforts to, say, bring in corporations to recycle their technology to provide updated infrastructure to schools to support computer science programs?
There are. I would direct you to the Youth Spark program. There are all kinds of programs that are local. They're local specific. They tend to focus on underserved communities, so inner cities and rural communities. And I would look there on the website, and there's all kinds of information about ways to bring companies involved. And Microsoft's not alone. We work with a lot of our technology partners and through the Youth Spark program. And I would start there if I were you.
I come from Bay Area, and there's the recognition by parents about this increased need for computer science education. And I've seen kids at grade 6 and 7 actually starting on Java. But where I'm seeing the traction is initiative by for-profit institutions or mushrooming schools, which do after-school programs. They're filling the gap, so to say, in the Bay Area. And I'm just wondering, do you specifically target them, give them guidance, or see that as a temporary measure? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, actually. I think that it's a temporary measure. I don't think they obviously aren't scaling enough, and they can't scale.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Which so we have this deficit that we have today. But I think our attitude would be anybody who's out there who's touching a worker, a potential high-tech worker who's sort of adding people to the pipeline is good for the overall pie, and we'd be very supportive. I will say there's a trend in Congress right now to not fund to not allow federal dollars to be used for for-profit educational institutions like ITT Tech and other things.
Sure, I agree, get that, but I'm just wondering from regard of the Youth Spark Club, which is the first time I'm hearing, guidance on what you want to teach, that's all.
Yeah, I'd have to ask Allison Knox, who manages our interface with the Youth Spark program from our DC office. I don't know how involved Youth Spark is with for-profit, but I would imagine, I mean, the stuff that we put out there is free for anyone to use, and so there's no reason why a teacher at a for-profit school couldn't grab that content and teach it. And we're not alone. I think Google has similar programs, Apple has similar programs. They really, Oracle, I'm sure, has similar programs as well.
Obviously, I'm probably the youngest person in the room. For your TEOS program and for your Hour of Code program, you're probably looking for someone with a lot more experience.
I don't think so.
But how can someone with a younger administrator get tied into these things?
We'll get your card, and I'll catch you directly with the person who manages the program. Thanks for volunteering. Did you guys hear that? That's great. Anybody else? Two more volunteers?
Oh,
yeah, that's right. Volunteers, right?
I still want to see all of those hands up, all of them.
You want to volunteer? Okay. We'll get your cards, and we'll, absolutely.
Good morning. I have three daughters, and I can tell my six-year-old is, she's already super into Minecraft, and I was going to show her this game, Space Kim. But Chris Hardwick, I was watching him speak, and he said something to the effect of, sometimes the things that you have to stretch are some of the things you become more passionate about. And so I'm wondering about my other two daughters, what might be a good resource? there's a lot of societal norms and things, and I'm just, they're both leaning towards, teaching and art, but I'm wondering if there's a big focus on, trying to break out of some of preconceived notions about what girls are supposed to do. And just in general, my son wants to be a fireman. So, would you I do want to get involved in one of these programs for sure.
So I would say I would encourage you to get involved. I think that you would probably learn a lot from being involved and sort of seeing how those play to girls specifically if you're involved in a program like that. It's a great sort of focus group kind of trial run for what you might teach your daughter. Programs that are like Minecraft and Hour of Code that are a little bit more advanced, or Scratch. I don't know if you've ever heard of Scratch. That's one kids are doing a lot of, Scratch. Older kids, I would say 10 years old. That's one thing I'd look to. The whole idea about girls and science and math is a challenge that I don't think we're trying to solve, because besides trying to get them more access to these technologies, if you science curriculum and you just put it in front of kids, you're going to get more girls involved, you're going to get more boys involved. So that's our approach to that. But there are these other sort of societal challenges about looking too smart and brainiac that social psychologists focus on a lot, and I have not heard that in any of our TEALS discussions or CSEC discussions. Yes?
Hi, I'm Daniel Tucker. I'm gone through, wondering what exactly you guys are going to do after they get out of high school. For example, when I was going through colleges, I found out during some transfers that one of the colleges were not considered accredited for computer sciences, yet they were advertising it as so. What kind of things are you going to set as standards for colleges to say that they are accredited for it and to stand by it?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's not an area in my expertise. It's not something that I know that we're trying to address through the coalition. If they're fraud, there's a whole nother it's a whole other issue and people who deal with that. I don't know about standards setting standard. I mean, accreditation is a standard. And some of the education groups that we work with, I can ask them about that and get their input. But that is a challenge. I mean, if a college is presenting itself as being able to teach your kids career science and they're not accredited, that's obviously a big problem. And I would say the best thing to do is do what you're doing, which is make sure they are before you enroll. But I think that from a government affairs perspective, from a policy perspective, it'd be very, very hard for us to do anything because I don't think Congress is at that kind of level.
Again, this is a little off topic, but one of the things that I'm heavily involved with in the school district is the first Lego competitions and first robotics competitions. In the Lego competitions, uh-huh. We have a tremendous amount of girl competitors there. But when they move into high school, they drop off. And even much as we try to encourage them to continue on with this education and this program, they have other things that they like to do and want to do. And my question is, how do we keep these girls involved? Because they seem to be very involved in the when they're in middle school, but when they get to high school, they drop off.
I mean, I think that's kind of in line with what the other gentleman was asking about girls. I think it's a challenge. It's a really big, I mean, that's a challenge across, you know, it depends on who you talk to. There's lots of controversy about these theories. That's a challenge across our entire educational system. When kids who are very serious students get into like junior high and high school, they suddenly get distracted by proms and sports and other kinds of things, and suddenly they get a little off track. And that's not a challenge that exists to the extent that does here in other countries. I mean, I don't know. That's a huge chunk. Naomi, if you have any thoughts about how do you keep young ladies on track and serious?
I think a lot of it is just it is some of the societal norms the other gentleman was asking about, because it's, again, if you don't have elective credit, right, for doing computer science or something else, if you're a girl, right, who's trying to graduate, so you're going to go for whatever. Other aspect to it is, yes, looking geeky and all these other things, right? And I say this as an astrophysicist with 43 patents in machine learning, right? So. But a lot of it is that. So I'm just being real here. So one of the issues I think we have is to try to help break some of those stereotypes of like, yeah, you know, you want to be super rich, you don't have to be Kim Kardashian, right? You want to be Mark Zuckerberg, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing, right? And it makes a big difference. And I do think a lot of that is that impression of what people think technologists are like or what they're, you know, they're doing. So Microsoft has this great commercial for female inventors. I don't know if you've seen it, but can you name a female inventor off the top of your head, right? And so it's a great commercial, right? You see, oh, Einstein, you know, Thomas Edison, you know, all these people, right? People will name, but it's really hard to name a female inventor. So check it out on the web and YouTube. You can find a female Microsoft. If you look for female inventors, it'll come up. It's a great commercial, but it's a good way to start the conversation going at least.
One thing I'd add to it, and this is not a quick fix by any stretch, this whole issue about tech diversity is significant. And when you think about nearly half of the, you know, half the population, more than half is female, and they're so underrepresented in career science programs. The best way to get other girls in those programs is to have them see other girls in those programs. The best way to do that is to get that pipeline going again and getting kids through the pipeline who are
Years that we had other females already there.
Yeah, see, that makes a big difference. Safety in numbers. Yeah.
So a quick question. We're obviously a very white state, so it's going to be a long time before we ever see computer science being brought in like math and science. One of the things we're finding is technology is just starting to enter our classrooms. And so I'm looking to, you know, are looking to see if maybe you know of some technology standards that can be implemented into the regular curriculum, K-12, to start introducing students to even utilizing computers. For example, we had a tech committee meeting just a couple of weeks ago where some of the business teachers at the high schools are saying, you know, we are expecting kids to kind of at least know how to get around it. They've never seen it in any of the other classes. So, you know, what is some of the work, I guess, to bridge that gap, getting to a place where you might use computer science in the future?
I think it's all the stuff that, it's a Band-Aid solution, but it's all the stuff that I described, like kind of USpark and the TEALS. And there are many, many other programs that we support that are kind of one-off kinds of approach. It gets kids familiar with technology. And there are two kinds, I should say, that there are two kinds of approaches. I mean, two kinds of problems you're trying to solve. One is kids who don't have access to technology at all, and you want them to pop out so they can get a job and work a computer. So it's like working with technology. They can work an iPhone because everybody has to. You want to have a job and have email and things. But there's also trying to get kids to focus on learning the basic skills so they can become programmers themselves, which is different than just being a user. And so I think in your case, it sounds like you're asking about you know program user programs, and I would say go to USpark, the USpark Hub, and look at content there. I'm sure there are lots of links to other sources outside of Microsoft as well. And that, I just think getting people to use it is key, and then creating access points where they can use it.
Both, just to answer a little bit, to add to your question, or answer your question, both Colorado and Nebraska went to state standardized testing and on the online. So that brought a ton of computers into the school systems because it kind of forced it to fund it. And then they pretty much created labs, and they were able to bring some of the other resources on that as well.
Yeah. There are lots of stories where people will go in, some company will come in, they'll do a tech lab somewhere, and they because there's not a teacher in those labs teachers who are of our generation, many of them aren't comfortable with technology themselves, and so they don't even want to teach them the most basic things, which is why the TEALS piece is so important and why it works. It's that you bring someone who brings in the heavy lift for the teacher, and the teachers, they know how to run their classrooms, they know how to communicate, they know how to shove things down the throats of kids, but they don't know technology, and you add that TEALS person in that room, and it's a really great relationship.
So I have a quick comment, all of us in the room here. I think the biggest thing that we can all do, the biggest takeaway from today and from conferences like this, to be involved not only with your own children, but mentors to as many kids as you possibly can. It's one thing to ask Microsoft to pitch in $75 million, but that's just, again, that's just another Band-Aid. It takes all of us working together to make a change, and that's why groups like Voices for Innovation are really Computer Science Education Coalition. We all have to band together, and it doesn't matter if it's just, if we're a small, I'm a small business owner. You know, I'm a really small shop, but I believe in giving back to the community and working in the community. And where your girls are involved, I'll tell you right now, the person that that got me into computers was my grandfather, who was a rancher in West Texas, and said that you need to learn computers because you'll always have a job. So it really, we do listen, as girls, we listen to our parents. We may not, we may pretend that we don't, but we do, we listen, and we want to be, we want to do good stuff. We want to be inspiring to other people. So stay involved. Get involved with what we're doing.
I'm over here with Naomi.
We're going this way. Sorry.
I live in a city in Michigan that in our area, our neighborhood is low income and very diverse. And I'm very interested in starting some kind of you know, grassroots type of thing. I'm not a coder. I'm IT infrastructure. And how do I talk to the school? How do I talk to the superintendent? How do I talk to those people in leadership at the school to see, like, are you doing this? Is there any way that, like, what do I point to?
Sure.
Like, this presentation was awesome. I wish they would have seen it. Like, how do I get them involved?
So I don't want to sound like a broken record. I would go to the TEALS website. I mean, one thing you could do tomorrow is you could go to the TEALS website, you could learn about it, see what's in there. You could probably walk into the school and say, I have the background. You don't have to be a coder to teach TEALS. And say, I want to be helpful. Do you have a teacher who's willing to do this experiment with me? And just start that way. I guarantee if you get your foot in the school, you're going to get to know the principal and the superintendent and everybody else. And they're going to love having you in there, because if they aren't offering it right now, they want to do the same thing. They just don't have the wherewithal to go. Yeah, they're trying to, you know, in a school like that, they're probably trying to do nutrition programs for their kids. And that's their number one priority. They're trying to keep the school environment safe, probably. And so having you walk in and say, I want to help you with this other problem that you have, I would imagine would welcome you with open arms. So I'd be happy to connect you with Knox, who is from Michigan. She runs this program for us out of our DC office. I'd be happy to put you in touch with Allison, because she's talked to a lot of teachers. And I've met a lot of the TEALS teachers and teachers from code.org, who are very active in that organization. And I can't not tell you how passionate they are. I can't even describe to you the passion that comes from those teachers. And they just feel it, and they're really making an impact. So I would encourage you to do that.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Taylor. I'm actually from Australia, but I come from a family in India who actually own and run schools in the developing parts of India, so sort of semi-rural. And recently, I'm sort of getting involved more and more. And I see a lot of kids, really bright mind, you know, very sharp, and they come from a rural background. So the question was, how do I get involved and start implementing programs with STEM and Microsoft? I'm a SharePoint author myself, SharePoint hybrid. But I'd like to get in touch with people, if you have partners in India, and sort of make connections and see how we can take this forward there.
But the Hour of Code stuff, we'll follow up on that, I said for sure. But I would encourage all of you who want to do something, and it's very simple, you don't have to code, you don't have to do anything, the Hour of Code, code.org stuff, you can run that yourself. It has scripts, it has everything that you want to do. It's very, very simple for you to do as a complete non-technologist even. It's definitely a possibility. All right, we do have to go. I know we're getting the hook here as part of it. But again, thank you so much, guys. I really do appreciate you coming here. Thank you.